This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Last Saturday, two suicide bomb blasts killed almost 100 people during a rally in the Turkish capital Ankara. Turkey has blamed the Islamic State for the attacks. This terrorist organization, based in Turkey's neighbors, the war-torn countries of Iraq and Syria, has recruited fighters from around the world, including Malaysia. It hopes to sustain its gains in Syria and Iraq, even as it expands its global network. This year, however, a US-led military operation against the Islamic State has killed tens of thousands of the group's fighters. Last month, Russia began attacking IS bases in Syria. On the surface, the combined assault from two superpowers should signal the end of IS, but is this really the case? Dr. Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at Birmingham University, elaborates further.
I think there is often a general impression that the Islamic State is always this growing, menacing force, always getting stronger. I think that's not quite right. It has had mixed fortunes in the past year. And for example, it has had notable gains in Iraq. In Syria, it controls part of northeast Syria and has moved into the center in the historic city of Palmyra. And that looks very scary on the surface, but the Islamic State has also suffered a series of setbacks in these main areas in the past year. It has lost cities in Iraq. It was pushed out of Tikrit in the center of the country. In Syria, it suffered a huge defeat at the hands of the Syrian Kurds. And I think up until a month ago, you could say the Islamic State was actually looking a little bit weaker and arguably at its weakest point since the start of early 2014. But the Russian intervention in Syria adds a new element to the equation, and it's an ironic one. On the surface, the Russians say that they are carrying out their airstrikes to attack the Islamic State. In fact, they're not. The main Russian target is the rebels who are fighting the Assad regime.
So it seems Russia is more focused on propping up its ally, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, by destroying his main enemies, the US-backed Syrian rebel force. But the unintended consequence of Moscow's intervention is to throw the Islamic State a lifeline.
Whether you call it ironic, the Islamic State, who supposedly is everyone's enemy, Russia, the United States, Europe, Arab states, they actually have been the biggest winner out of the developments in Syria in the past month. And as Russia is trying to bomb the rebels, it makes things easier for the Islamic State because they're also fighting the rebels. As the rebels have to try to defend themselves from one threat, the Russians, the Islamic State can advance and indeed has done so. And as they get stronger in Syria, if that happens, then of course it helps them get stronger in Iraq because the two countries neighbor each other and the border is very fluid between them. The Islamic State isn't simply always strong or always weak. Its fortunes depend upon the context of the conflicts in Syria and Iraq, and that a position of relative weakness since the start of this year has been one which may be turning into a position of relative strength.
It is possible that the Russian intervention in Syria may help the Islamic State regroup and divert attention from its operations in Iraq.
The Islamic State is trying to take advantage of the developments rather than to have to defend against them. In Syria, they benefit because the Russians are weakening their enemies. The Russians are weakening the rebels, or at least diverting them. So the Islamic State gets a bit of breathing space for its operations and will expand in some areas of the country. The second benefit is actually in Iraq, and that is because everybody now talks about Syria, the Islamic State goes a little bit under the limelight in Iraq. It can regroup. It can consolidate its hold on parts of the country, such as Anbar province in the west and on Mosul. And it really doesn't face at this point any prospect of a coalition, whether it involves the Iranians or whether it involves a U.S.-led coalition, and certainly not Iraqi government forces, at least in the short term.
Another ironic consequence of Moscow's campaign is that it could help the Islamic State recruit even more fighters.
Look, we are fighting all foreigners who come into our area. You know, we fought the Americans, we fight the British, we fight the French. And for them to say, we fight the Russians as well. It's always an effective recruiting device to say, the foreigners, the infidels are attacking us, you want to join us.
How have the military efforts against the IS in its headquarters in Iraq and Syria affected its regional and global network?
The Islamic State has a core leadership which is largely based in Iraq and Syria, And then usually it has affiliated, you know, almost like chapters or groups of members in areas such as North Africa and areas such as Asia. What happens in North Africa and in Asia is not as dependent as much on a direct order that comes out from the head of the Islamic State, Mr. al-Baghdadi, as much as it is whether there are the local resources for these types of operations. With the exception of Egypt, Islamic State operations further afield have actually not been as prominent in the last few months. Whether that's because of a shortage of manpower or organization, we're not seeing, for example, the mass executions, beheadings, and bombings in most countries. Now, this could all change. You should never rule out the prospect of the Islamic State carrying out another attack in Saudi Arabia or in Yemen. But I don't see the Islamic State as much as being a global menace as more as it is a regional threat, which also has some affiliates beyond the Middle East who will be there, who will carry out violent acts from time to time.
Hundreds of thousands of refugees are fleeing the Syrian conflict and seeking asylum in Europe. There are reports that IS militants may masquerade as refugees and carry out terrorist attacks in the future, but Scott plays down this Trojan horse scenario.
I think one of the most dangerous myths circulating right now is the idea that IS will use this refugee crisis to create a global web of terrorism by infiltrating the refugees, you know, almost by corrupting them to carry out attacks. There is no evidence of this. That's the first thing to say. The second point is that logically, it doesn't really fit the Islamic State's priority right now. You know, the Islamic State already has sympathizers. It already has people who can carry out attacks in Europe. I mean, we've seen that with the Charlie Hebdo attacks in France earlier this year. We've seen it with attacks in Belgium. We even seen it in attacks beyond Europe in Australia. So the idea that the Islamic State needs to go out and infiltrate refugees, carry out these attacks, no, that's not the case. I think, in fact, what happens is the reverse. Because you get this myth that the IS is infiltrating the refugees, you then get a rhetoric which says, we can't have these refugees. They're too dangerous. They're too risky. And what the Islamic State does is it exploits that. And it says to Syrians, for example, it says, look, why are you trying to get into Europe? They don't want you. They don't like you. They think you're all terrorists. You should stay in Syria, and you know what? You should stay in Syria, and you should work with us. And so again, in another irony, by exaggerating or by emphasizing the threat of the Islamic State in this way, you probably don't make them weaker. You actually make them stronger.
Turning back to Syria, has the Russian intervention actually helped President Assad against his enemies like the IS and rebel groups?
We're talking about Syrian military, President Assad's military, looking to make gains against the rebels, not the Islamic State. And in the short term, I think the Syrian military is going to try to advance. I think the bigger question is whether they will succeed. But so far, they're struggling to make headway because despite having Russian air cover, advisors, troops on the ground, the Syrian army is weaker than it was even a year ago. It's having problems gathering manpower. A lot of its armored vehicles have been damaged or destroyed. They reportedly lost 17 tanks in a single day. So I'm not sure even with the Russian support that the Syrian military can turn the tide.
Russia could see its move into Syria backfire. Already, there has been retaliation this week with a rocket attack on the Russian embassy in Damascus, with groups like IS and Al-Qaeda calling for Muslims in Chechnya to launch more counterattacks on Russian soil. So despite all the rhetoric, what are the chances of a real international coalition coming together to destroy the IS?
Everybody's talking about a coalition to fight the Islamic State, and I don't really see anyone stepping up with that as a priority. The Americans, they've been indecisive in their actions in Syria and in Iraq. They don't appear to have a clear strategy to link air operations with what happens on the ground. The Iranians have said that they will not cooperate with the Americans in any negotiations, including those about confronting the Islamic State. The Russian interest right now is not in confronting the Islamic State. The Europeans appear that unable to move or unwilling without a clear indication that the United States will join them in whatever they try. Local Arab countries appear to be uncertain about what to do about the Islamic State beyond internal security. The Saudis perhaps could lead an effort to confront the Islamic State, but again, they're more concerned with overthrowing the Assad regime than they are with taking on the Islamic State directly.
That was Professor Scott Lucas from Birmingham University. So for the time being, at least, it seems like the Islamic State will continue to rule in Syria and Iraq unless global and regional powers stop pursuing their own agendas and unite to destroy this global terrorist organization. I'm Jason Lim, reporting for BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.